What does the Diamondback say to his big sister?
I don't know what.
Don't be such a rattletale.
It's time for the Children's Hour radio show. Broadcasting live from the Indian Pueblo Culture Center in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Yeah.
We're broadcasting live from the Indian Pueblo Cultural Center here on the Children's Hour. I am Katie Stone, and the Children's Hour is produced by the Children's Hour Incorporated. You can learn more. It's a nonprofit organization. You can learn more at childrenshour.org. And so happy to have everyone here on our crew, and also Mr. Toya and his grandchildren, or his son and his grandson. Hello, welcome to the Children's Hour, Stephen Toya.
Thank you. First of all, I like to say in my indigenous language, Goatsihopa. Welcome, each and every one of you, to the Children's Hour here in the beautiful land of enchantment, but most of all here at the Indian Pueblo Cultural Center. I am very honored to be here to honor our little people, what we call our children and our grandchildren. Thank you again for invites.
Oh, so great to have you with us. And we have a huge crew here. I'm Katie. We're going to start over here. I'm Katie.
Hello, it's Zen.
Hello, it's Maggie.
Good morning, I'm Sienna.
Good morning, it's Annabella.
Hi, it's Siobhan.
Hi, I'm Leela.
Hello, I'm Oscar.
May the fourth be with you. It's Maya.
Hello, it's Haley.
Hello, it's Maya.
Hello, it's Evan.
Hello, it's Amadeus.
That's quite a crew here on the Children's Hour. And then, of course, oh, Demon Steve, you found us again? You're chasing us.
No, I just like the show.
I am so glad. Demon Steve, welcome to the show. Hi, great to see you, Demon Steve. And look at this fabulous audience that's here. Hello, audience. Hello.
Welcome, everybody. Thank you for coming and supporting.
We're going to learn more about the Indian Pueblo Cultural Center and all of the things it offers for kids and for families with our friend John Jahadi, who's going to come up in just a little bit. But first, Stephen Toya, could you please introduce your son and your grandson who are here with you?
All right. First of all, I'd like to say I am a second generation of performing and singing acts. I'm very honored to carry on my late father's legacy of performing the arts of not only song but dance. I have my third generation, my son Kyle Simon, And I also have my grandson, 9-year-old Shane Toya, the fourth generation. I'm very happily married, going on 35 years this year. I have 9 beautiful children, and we were also blessed with 17 grandchildren. And we all sing, and we all dance, and we all perform together as a beautiful family.
Wow, thank you so much. You are from Zia Pueblo.
I am from Zia Pueblo, and I'm also affiliated with the Pueblo of Jemez Pueblo. We are also descendants of once was the largest tribe in New Mexico. It's a monument here in northern New Mexico called Pecos Monument. We are also affiliated to the Hopi Nation. My late father was half Hopi, and my mother is half Hopi. And my late father was quarter Comanche out of Lawton, Oklahoma. So we're a diverse family. We're very lucky to represent these 5 different tribes so that when we do a show, we're not only representing one tribe, but we're representing 5 different tribes. So there's a lot to add to our performances. So we're not just representing one tribe. We can perform the Comanche, the Hopi, and the Pueblo lifestyle here in New Mexico. Thank you again.
And Stephen Toya, are you a drum maker too?
Yes, I am a drum maker. I've been making drums for the past 38 years. I made my very first rawhide drum at the age of 15. So I'm also an artist. I make moccasins. I do everything from bow and arrows. I'm a crafter. I used to do a lot with the Boy Scout groups as far as doing Native American regalias. I do a lot of artifacts, bow and arrows, shields, and it's part of our heritage. And I'm very honored and very glad that I have the talented that the Creator has gifted me with to continue to hand down those cultures, the tradition, and our identity as only not only as indigenous people, but I share my art with all colors, all indigenous, no matter where you come from. It's called giving back. It's called sharing. It's called education. My daddy always said, the more you can teach, the more you can share is the best way we can respect one another's culture.
I love that. Pueblo music includes lots of different music from Hopi, Zuni, Taos, San Ildefonso, Santo Domingo, Zia, Zuni, you name it, all the Puebloan peoples. And you know, some people consider Puebloan music the most complex music form of all Native American music because it uses these hexatonic and heptatonic scales, whatever all that means. But I guess what it means is that you're singing in a scale and performing in a scale when you play your flute that's unusual and unique to the Puebloan peoples. And I know you have a lot of music to share with us. Can you share something now with us, with our audience?
That I would like to share a very important song. Earlier we sang a flag song to honor us as proud American people that we are. So at this time, I want to share a very important song. And these are to our warrior people. As indigenous people, we've always prayed for our warrior people. Today in America, they're known as veterans. These veteran people are very, very, very powerful and respectful people to us. As indigenous people, we continue to pray for their safety returns back to our homelands. But most of all, we always got to remember those fallen warriors that pay the ultimate price with their lives. You know, America is nothing without our veterans, and we continue to always respect our veteran people. So at this time, I'd like to share and teach these young people, the value and the importance of our veteran people. They need to learn and to understand at this young age because a lot of our veterans pay the ultimate price with their lives. They will never return home to their loved ones, but we continue to pray for the widows, the kids and grandkids, for their happy life. But it's called respect, so I like to share this very powerful song. It's a veteran song. Just 2 verses real quick. Yeah. applause. And thank you to all our veterans. Hoo-cha.
Stephen Toya. Thank you, Stephen. Well, I am just delighted to have on the Children's Hour today someone I've been a fan of for a very long time, because I've come here to the Indian Pueblo Cultural Center and I've talked to this guy in the hallways and learned so much. But even before that, he used to be a Native America Calling, and he used to be a fellow KUNM volunteer and a fellow radio broadcaster. Please welcome, with a warm round of applause, Mr. John Jahadi.
Kawatsi, Dawa, Keshe, Elekwa, in the language of my mother and my father. Greetings to you all, and thank you very much for joining us today. Also, for being here at the Indian Pueblo Cultural Center. It's our honor to help our guests understand a little bit about who we are as people, the societies, the civilizations, the different groups of people that have always lived here. And so it's exciting to be here today. Thank you very much, Katie.
What is the Indian Pueblo Cultural Center?
Oh, terrific. Great question. Well, let me help you understand that. Well, first of all, we need to understand about the word Pueblo, all right? Certainly, the United States government currently recognizes 573 federally recognized Native American groups. I start to use the term groups because when we use the term tribe, sometimes it implies that these groups were not really seen as advanced, as sovereign, which means they have the right to decide for themselves. They have the right to develop their own governments. So when we see them as collective groups of communities and give them the right, or recognize them the right to be here as human beings, to have their own governments, to have their own choices on how they can live, whether they can speak their own languages, whether they can practice their own spiritual beliefs, that's what we use the word sovereignty. The Indian Pueblo Cultural Center wants to help exemplify that idea as it applies to what we call the Pueblo people. So the word Pueblo actually comes from the Spanish. It's a Spanish word. So when the Spanish first came here in the 1500s, to them, and as human beings, one of our strongest senses is our vision. We look at things and we make judgment calls, which is all right. We might judge people on the clothes they wear, or if you guys went to a school and I saw you guys wearing your school colors, like say it was purple, then I would say you were the purple people, because that's my first impression of you. So when the Spanish came here, to them, to the Spanish, they saw these groups of people, and to them, they said, well, you know, they all look alike, they all live in the same kind of houses, they all grow corn, their skin is all brown, and so, well, we'll just group them together and we say Pueblo. But they didn't realize that how distinct each of the different groups were, the group from Taos, how they're different from the group from Zuni, how the group from Isleta is different from the group in Okeawenge, but they just saw them as a collective. So that's the word why we say Pueblo. But this place helps our guests understand a little bit about that, that each of these distinct groups, the Zuni, the Santa Clara, Santo Domingo, Zia, Jemez, where my brother is from, that we all are distinct. We have our own beliefs, our own languages that we speak, and that we have this social structure that still continues today, even though the groups of people who were living here were even living here long before the United States became the United States. Even long before the Egyptian pyramids were being built, groups of people were living here. They were developing their societies. They had children just like you. They ate corn. They went to the bathroom just like everybody else. And they were human beings. So that's what we hold to make sure that we speak the language and the voices of those who preceded us. So that's what the Indian Pueblo Cultural Center is all about. Good question.
So where we're standing, you say here, where we're standing right now in Albuquerque, of course, right now we're at the Indian Pueblo Cultural Center, and this is native land, officially native land. But even where my house is a couple miles away, all of that was Pueblo land.
Well, certainly we can look at what science tells us, because science says that, and this is always changing, it's changed within the past 5 years, that human beings came to this side of the world about 20,000 years ago. That has changed from what was initially thought about 14,000 years ago. But every year, as science improves in its understanding about human development, that human beings have always lived on this side of the world, different from China, in Europe, and all those other places, that for the longest time, human beings have been here. So when we say that all of what we now call America, Central America, South America, even up into Alaska, human beings have always been here. So, and certainly, you know, in October, we commemorate this man, Columbus, And certainly he was the first person from the other side of the world to come to this side. But to say it would be he discovered it, well, there were people already here. And so it would be like if I sort of saw your purse on the table there and I went through it and says, oh, I discovered your iPhone, it's mine now. Well, that's the same idea of somebody, well, somebody's already here and somebody was already making their homes. They were growing corn and they were already having different societies. So when we think of it in that perspective, it changes the whole idea of what we mean by discovery.
It sure does. Zen has a question for you.
Oh, yeah, yes.
Right to the mic.
Yeah. I've heard that oftentimes from Asia to America, there have been ice bridges that have formed. And back in the Ice Age, I believe that's how animals like camels got to Africa and how humans got to America. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, exactly. It's really interesting. But let me help you understand a little bit of also in addition to that. Each of the different indigenous groups throughout all the Americas, not just North America, but all the way from, and actually even most places around the entire world, whether they're going to be in China, Mongolia, even Scandinavia, the Sami people, the indigenous people there, every group of people already has a story of where they think they came from before what science tells us. Certainly, some groups of people say they came from the mountains. Some groups of people say they came from the rivers, from the mists in the hills. For our people, from my father's group, we say we came from the Grand Canyon. That's our story, and we call those immersion stories, our stories of where we came from. But certainly science then also tells us another part, what we call the Beringia theory, or Bering Land Strait Bridge, that certainly that human beings came to this side of the world at a certain point in time. Other animals were here as well. So we know what science says, but that doesn't say that what we believe or the systems or the spiritual stories that we have, it doesn't negate that. It doesn't say that that's wrong and this is right. All we're saying, and we would like to help our the public know that these stories are just as valid, they're just as credible and reliable as what we say and what we believe, because certainly as a science teacher, I can tell you that, you know, we talk about the Big Bang Theory, that 14.8 billion years ago, now we have this cosmos, and then we even our planet has a story that 4.6 billion years ago, some cosmic dust got together, now we have this planet we walk on. So everything has a story, and our story is just as credible as what science says, but we blend them together, and sometimes they run parallel to one another, and other times they might not always run parallel, but it's still important to say, to understand that these stories are just as relevant and as important, what we have and what science says.
What kind of stuff do you do here?
Oh, terrific. That's one of my favorite parts, too. Well, let me tell you what I do. The most important thing I can do in my job, my responsibility, is to help our guests understand a little bit about why we're here. Help our guests understand a little bit about the culture and the heritage of who we are. And certainly my friend over here, Stephen, had a song and had a drum. We have to remember those songs have always been here. They've been here, like I said, long before Europe was Europe, long before, you know, the Egyptian pyramids were being built, long before Jesus was born, that these songs, these prayers, these languages, these items, the land we walk on, corn has always been here. And so that's the origin of what we help explain to our guests, that this is not just something that occurred after the United States became the United States. When we think about the United States being a country, it's barely been a country for 245 years. But to think back and say people have always been here for hundreds and thousands of years, that's only a small part of who we are as human beings. So the dances we sing, the languages we share, the stories we tell have always been a part of it. And as long as we continue to tell those stories, and that's my job, to help our guests understand, and they come from all over the world, not just from Albuquerque, but they come from all over the world because they have a sort of an interest in who we are as indigenous people, that stories we tell will continue, we continue those voices of our predecessors, our ancestors, the stories and the language and the knowledge that we have, and we will hopefully continue that for the next 50 years, for the next 100 years, and maybe as far as we can see into the future, that's the story that we will told. But at the same time, we have to think about what's going on today. We have many Native students who are going to high school and college, just like you all will be doing. And so when they graduate, they're going to have the same academic standards like all of you will have when you say you graduate from high school, that when they graduate, you know, they can go to, you know, work at McDonald's if they want to, or if they want to, they can work at a bank. Or if they choose to, they can go to the community college here in Albuquerque or any community college. Or if they really wanted to, they could go to Michigan State Harvard, Dartmouth, Cambridge if they wanted to. Or if they wanted to, they could go to the Army or Navy. Or if they really wanted to, they could go to Annapolis, West Point. But the options are there only because of education. It gives you those tools so that we can participate. But at the same time, when we have our feast days, we still have a connection to this land. And that's the reason why we name our exhibits here, We Are of This Place, because it's always been who we are, and that culture and the heritage and the legacy we carry as Pueblo people, as well as our neighbors, the Navajo, the Comanche, the Tohono O'odham's down in northern Mexico, the Yaqui, the Tarahumara, all of those neighbors who have always lived here, we continue to carry that story that we've always had, but at the same time, look to the future.
How many groups are there in New Mexico?
Terrific, good question. Well, like I said, the groups that we share, again, are recognized as sovereign. That means they have the right to decide what's best for them, whether they want to have a business, whether they want to have a casino, whether they want to have hire people and develop anything that they have. That's their right. That's their what we call sovereign right. Here in New Mexico, there are 23 indigenous groups that have always lived here or call this place home. Many other places around the United States also had similar groups, but currently of the 50 states, only 35 states have sovereign indigenous federally recognized groups. Here in New Mexico, there are 23. Of those 23, 19 fall under the term Pueblo. Again, back to that Spanish term. The other non-Pueblo groups are the Navajo Nation and the three Apache groups, the Jicarilla, Mescalero, and the Fort Sill Apache. Now, we also have two other Pueblos that follow under that characteristic or characterization, but one is in Arizona. We call them Hopi. And the other group is actually the relatives of this Pueblo just south of Albuquerque, Isleta, and they're right within the city of El Paso. So if you Google map the city of El Paso, you see the city limits of El Paso, and right in the middle of the city of El Paso is the Pueblo of Isleta del Sur. And they migrated there in 1680. That's about 80 years, even before the United States thought of this idea of something called the Declaration of Independence. Remember that thing? Well, 85 years before that time came, these groups of people decided, you know what, we're going to go down that way. They've lived there, and they're relatives of this Pueblo just south of Isleta, or south of Albuquerque.
We're speaking with John Jahadi. He is a cultural educator here at the Indian Pueblo Cultural Center, where we are broadcasting live on the Children's Hour. We're going to come back to you, Mr. Jahadi, and we're going to talk a lot more about the Indian Pueblo Cultural Center. You have a story for us. We can't wait to hear it. And this is the Children's Hour, broadcasting live on KUNM. Thanks for listening, and we're live from the Indian Pueblo Cultural Center. No. No. Listening to the Children's Hour, Chester Mahudi with a Zuni friendship song right here on the Children's Hour. We're broadcasting live from the Indian Pueblo Cultural Center, and with me is John Jahadi. He is a cultural educator here at the IPCC, and that Zuni friendship song was sung in another language. What is that language?
Well, we know that there are five recognized indigenous languages are spoken amongst the current 19 pueblos. We can also refer back to what the Spanish wrote, that when they came here and they documented things because they were spending the king's money, so they had to write things down. And so we can go back and speculate from what they wrote that before 1600, there were more than 100 different community groups. I guess we would say them, today's terms, we would say there were Pueblo groups. Stephen mentioned about Pecos. There were many other places around New Mexico that we see, and we see remnants of those communities, but there are other places where we don't see those remnants. But the languages we speak are distinct. They're different. Sciences tell us that they had no origin, that they originated from some point, and because of that, they're all distinct. They're not related to one another. And because of that, we presume that at the time the Spanish came, that many individuals within communities were multilingual. And that's one of the unique things about New Mexico, that is that Stephen mentioned about diversity. New Mexico has always been diverse. Actually, the whole Western Hemisphere has always been diverse. And so with that component, we speak these languages even today. The language he spoke was in the Pueblo Zuni, which is my father's language. The other languages we speak that is only spoken by one other group is Towa from the community of Jemez or Walatoa. Then the other three remaining groups are Tiwa, Tewa, and Carice. And Carice is my mother's language, so many people speak many languages here.
Do people understand each other who are speaking these languages here? Are they like, is it like Spanish and Italian where you can kind of pull out a few words, or are they very distinct?
They're very distinct. I guess a good example would be to think about someone who speaks Greek and then somebody who speaks Mandarin.
Oh.
There's no relation.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And so with that understood, then perhaps maybe at the time the Spanish came, other groups of people speak many other different languages, and they were interpreters for those. Then they learned how to speak Spanish. Then the Americans came in the 1800s, and people learned how to speak English. So New Mexico has always been diverse. We've had all these languages. And even just we think about the Spanish language. There's three dialects of Spanish that are spoken here, even just in New Mexico. So it's amazing that this country has issues with diversity, but New Mexico could be an example of diversity of how we see collective communities exist.
We're talking with John Jahadi, and in the background, Stephen Toya playing on the flute for us, and we're excited. We're going to come back and talk more with you about educational programs here at the Indian Pueblo Cultural Center.
You're listening to the Children's Hour, broadcasting live from the Indian Pueblo Cultural Center in Albuquerque, New Mexico. We'll be right back.
Stephen Toya, we're broadcasting live from the Indian Pueblo Cultural Center here in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And at our side is John Jahadi. He's a cultural educator here at the IPCC. And we had just a couple questions for you about your educational programs. And then, John, I wonder if you'll tell us a story after that.
Oh, sure. Certainly, we would be glad to.
That'd be great. What kind of educational programs do you offer here for kids and families?
Well, good question. Let me help you understand that. We offer, through our education department, we have two very excellent staff members who help accomplish that. We have a couple of things. Number one, we offer tours to address any educator who would like to come and visit our facility as an example to demonstrate and show the culture and the heritage of the Pueblo people. We also have two of our educators who go out to the schools to help explain this and perhaps provide an opportunity in a classroom setting. We also have an online curriculum that is accessible to any educator by going to our website and then pulling up the what we call indigenous wisdom to help use the curriculum that we've established from educators and academics who are native, wanting to make sure that we incorporate those information in the, what we call indigenous wisdom. In addition to that, we have a summer program that will be registering over the next couple of weeks that starts in May for students and youth. We also have a whole membership opportunity for anyone to participate. as well as one of the more important things is that we just don't use this as a education for students or, you know, elementary school students. We've had students from all over the world come to this place, even university and college graduate students who come to this facility because they want to learn a little bit more about the culture and the heritage of what this whole place is to give an example of. So we offer those opportunities. In addition to that, we have a library, we have a resource center, an archive center, and so there are many opportunities, and the best way to find out what we have to offer as it applies to education would be to go to our website, which is indianpueblo.org. On the top menu bar, it says Learn. Click on Learn, and there's 5 different opportunities to access for anyone, whether they're going to be an educator, a student, or, you know, an adult.
I know you briefly mentioned this, but Maya has a question over here.
How do you become a member of the Indian Pueblo Cultural Center? Do you have to be Native American?
Oh, no, you don't. Thank you very much. Good question. Well, you know, that's one of the best things about the Indian Pueblo Cultural Center. We're very thankful, and we're very proud of all the members. And all members come from all around the world. They're not just from the New Mexico. They're not just Native. Anybody who has a vested interest, and certainly what we encourage is to that they have generated interest in making sure the story is told. But then also on top of that, the financial aspect allows us to carry on the message. And our mission statement is basically to preserve and perpetuate the Pueblo culture, not just for today, but in the future. So by being a member, you enable or you allow this mission statement to continue. How one becomes a member would be to contact either through online, and actually for the few more days, we have an opportunity for a reduced fee.
That's pretty cool. So yeah. People can learn more at indianpueblo.org.
Correct.
You have a story for us. I know everybody would love to hear it. And tell us a little bit about your story and then let's hear it.
Well, I'm going to show this book so everybody can look and see. This is a very well-known story. We have this book in our gift shop area. This is a well-known story that was first recorded in a written form back in the 1800s, but it's a story that's been part of the Zuni people for thousands of years, and it's really a way to explain how people sometimes, their pride, their desire for greed, can sometimes get the best of them. This is called The Dragonfly's Tale. Just like any story, it always, remember, most stories, even like today's stories like Star Wars, it starts out long, long ago, okay? Well, when we say long, long ago, we mean long before our parents, long before our grandparents. And so when we think about time in that regard, we're going to say long, long time ago. And this story begins with these two, what we call our corn maidens. Our corn maidens are very special to us in the Zuni culture. They bring us rain. They bring us good harvest. They bring us the ability to have a sustainable society that we don't have for want. And by respecting and honoring the corn spirits, they contribute to our society and our well-being. Well, these two corn spirits, one the white corn spirit and one the blue corn spirit, were going throughout the Pueblo of Zuni. The word we use for the Pueblo of Zuni is Hawiku. Or long ago, before the Europeans came to this side of the world, the other word we use for the Pueblo of Zuni was Halona Itiwana. And what that means is the middle place. And so long ago, the corn spirits were going through the Pueblo. They brought the rain. They brought the rain, the warm weather for the corn to grow. But unfortunately, they had what they noticed was some of the tribal leaders were sort of getting very proud. They were very getting boastful, saying that, oh, we get all this stuff. We put all the work in it, and we're going to have all this corn. We have all this pumpkins and squash and beans. And they think it's they're only because of their efforts that they got this, but they didn't realize that it was only through the gifts of the corn maidens that they were able to have those items. And in doing so, they felt that by being very boastful, they would say, oh, we're going to show the other neighbors how good we have it. So they said, why don't we have a pretend war? Instead of having a pretend war, we're going to have like a food fight you have in your cafeteria. We're going to waste our food because we're going to say, that's how much we have. In our boastfulness and in our pride, we're going to say we're going to have a food fight. And what we're going to do is we're going to show off how well we are off to our other neighbors, the Lagunas, the Acamas, the Hopis, the Navajos, the Apaches. And so let's invite them, and we'll have a big food fight in the plaza. So they sent runners all around to invite all their neighbors to come. Well, the corn maidens were concerned about what they were doing and their pride. And so they dressed up like old ladies, like old beggars, and they walked through the town. And everybody was ignoring them except for these two children. And when they came up to the two children offered them some food and bread. But before the old ladies could take it, one of the elders came and said, "No, don't give them any food, because old people or old beggars should be working for their food. Don't just give them, because we have all this food. We should keep it to ourselves." Well, what happened was then they had a food fight, and you see the picture there. And you can put this on your website. You can put the book on your website. Okay. They had a big food fight in their plaza. They were throwing food around. They were throwing corn cakes all around. And they were just really being very proud and boastful. Well, what happened was the corn maidens realized that these people need to learn a lesson. So after the food fight, everybody went to bed because they had so much fun. Well, throughout the night, all the rodents, mice, birds, all the animals came and started picking up all the food. They went through all the storehouses and took all the corn, everything away, to show the Zuni people that they were too boastful, too proud. And even though for the next few years they tried to make the corn grow, because the corn maidens were trying to show them a lesson, there was no rain or the crops grew very poorly. Even though they sang their songs, said their prayers, did their dances, they still weren't able to grow as much corn as possible. Eventually, they decided to leave the Pueblo Zuni because they were starting to eat things that they really shouldn't eat, like maybe old weeds and old things that they didn't have because they were getting so hungry. But they decided to go to some of the other pueblos. But sometimes some of the pueblos said, "You know what, you were so proud and so boastful that, you know, you thought you had everything, that we'll give you a little bit, but you were really wasteful." Eventually, unfortunately, when all the people left, they left the two children behind. They didn't realize that they were asleep under some of the blankets. Well, the little girl became a little afraid, so her brother tried to make her happy. So he made a little butterfly out of some corn stalks, and he put together some wings, and he said this would be her little toy to help her not become so afraid. Miraculously, the corn maidens realized how this little boy and this little girl had helped them and tried to give them food, even though they looked like beggars. They were only pretending to be beggars. Well, they made that little corn stalk butterfly turn into something that was alive. The little butterfly flew off to the corn maidens, told them about the dire situation of the two little children. And so the corn maidens sent the butterfly back, and with corn and all kinds of fruits and vegetables, so that the little boy and little girl could have the food they needed, because everybody else was so wasteful. And they learned how back to plant the corn, how to take care of the gardens, and also be respectful and thankful to the corn maidens for their gifts. Eventually, the Pueblo from Zuni returned back to the Pueblo Zuni to be realized at their lesson. They realized that they were crude, they were wasteful, they were proud, and so as a result of that, they returned back and they found the two children asleep. And they realized that afterwards that the corn maiden made that little butterfly turn into the dragonfly, and that's the story of the Pueblo of Zuni, how we revere the Pueblo, the dragonfly, as a bringer or the bringer of gifts from our corn maidens. And you notice perhaps in the Pueblo Cultural Center, our store over here is called Shumakaloa. Well, in Shumakaloa, in the Zuni language, is dragonfly, and so that's the name of the place that we get gifts for here in our facility here.
John Zahadi reading Dragonfly's Tale. It's by Christina Rodanas, and it is published by Clarion Books. And you are listening to the Children's Hour. Stephen Toya and his son and his grandson are going to play a little bit for us. Can you tell us what you're going to play?
Yes, I'm wearing a shirt. I know we're live on radio and you can't see what I'm wearing, but I have a shirt that says women are sacred. You know, I want to honor right now all the women around the world. You know, my daddy always said as a young boy that physically us men and boys are stronger physically than women. But there's one thing a man could never do, that is to possess life. Women bring life into this world. And at this time, I want to honor all the grandmas, all the mothers, all the young female women, these little children, these little girls This song is an Omaha song. It's a prayer song for the female parts. I want to ask these little children as I sing, my grandson's going to be over here dancing, expressing through song, through dance. These children don't need to know a style of dance. It's within the spirit of what they carry. A lot of our little people don't know how to express as we do verbally as adults. So a lot of it is emotional. Sometimes it's tears, it's smiles, it's happiness. But the thing about us is the drum, the spirit of the drum. A lot of our prayers are still within the drum. So at this time, I want to honor the women, the female parts of who we are as human beings, to give them the continuing prayers that we need for them to continue to be living healthy and bringing newborns into our world. It's what we teach. So at this time, this is an Omaha prayer song. It was dedicated in honor of the females, the women. And a lot of the times, it's about our women soldiers, our women vets. You know, a lot of the times through history, our women has always been a part of the armed forces. But today, we have armloads of women standing in battle with our men. So this song is about everything, about women, about the female part of who we are as human beings. So I dedicate this song to the mothers sitting here, to the grandmothers, to my mom, but most of all to our ancestors that paved this road for our happiness in life. This is a beautiful song. And children, if you want to get up and dance with my grandson, he's going to dance his freestyle of dance. This is your way, we say, is expressing your beauty, what you carry inside you. A honor song. Round of applause. This was to honor and to continue to pray and respect for the female life. They are very beautiful and they are very powerful. Thank you for letting us share this beautiful song.
When the power of love overcomes the love of power, then the world will know peace.
To give our children a better world to live in.
The world needs to find a way to peace and love.
We got to give our children a better world to live in.
The world needs to find a way to peace and love.
We got to give our children a better world to live in.
is killing and rumors of war. All around us, mankind still fighting to conquer, to enslave their own brother. Make a sister feel shame for the color of her skin. The heavens weep for the destruction. To find a way to peace and love, we got to give our children a better world to live in. The world needs to find a way to peace and love. We got to give our children a better world to live in. Peace and freedom, just a daydream we wish for. The power is in the hands. Give our children a better world to live in. The world needs to find a way to peace and love. We got to give our children a better world to live in. We need peace and we need love. We need love. We need love and we need peace. Hey, 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 hey. We got to give our children a better world to live in. The world needs to find a way to peace and love. We got to give our children a better world to live in. The world needs to find a way to peace and love. We got to give our children a better world to live in. The world needs to find a way to peace and love.
Shelley Morning Song. Both of those little pieces were from her CD called Love Medicine. And we're pretty excited to be broadcasting live right now from the Indian Pueblo Cultural Center. And it's a beautiful day for it, for sure. In the background, you're hearing Stephen Toya. And he's from Zia Pueblo and other places, lots of history there. And delighted to have such wonderful guests on our show today.
It's time for the Children's Hour Birthday Club.
Kids in the club get a birthday greeting on the air and a gift in the mail.
Happy birthday if today is your birthday.
Happy birthday to Airdrima. Sorry from Chama, New Mexico, who's turning 4 years old tomorrow.
Happy birthday to Autumn Alcott from Albuquerque, who's turning 7 years old on Monday.
Happy birthday to Krista Lane from Albuquerque, who's turning 10 years old on Monday.
Happy birthday to Rusty Wallace from Albuquerque, who's turning 12 years old on Monday.
Happy birthday to True Hollyoak LeClaire from Albuquerque, who's turning 9 years old on Friday.
Happy birthday to Jadua Malman from Edgewood, New Mexico, who's turning 9 years old on Friday.
Kids 12 and younger are welcome to join the Children's Hour Birthday Club at childrenshour.org.
We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, where we posted photos from today's show. Just search for the Children's Hour radio show.
Today's show was produced by Katie Stone with help from all of us Children's Hour Kids crew.
We had engineering for support from Andreas Martinez here at the Indian Pueblo Cultural Center and Jerry Detada.
Many thanks to Stephen Toya from Zia Pueblo for all the live music on today's show.
Indeed. Thank you to the Indian Pueblo Cultural Center for hosting this broadcast, including thank you to John Jahati, who's right here. Thank you so much, John. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you to Joel Wigglesworth here at the IPCC and Mike Cook, who is the tech guy who made it happen so we could broadcast. They all helped us behind the scenes. Next week on the Children's Hour, we're going to be learning about roadrunners with Dr. Christopher Witt from the Museum of Southwestern Biology and graduate student Tina Guo. And you can tune in next week to the Children's Hour and hear all about roadrunners. Stephen Toya, please take it away. And thank you for being with us on the Children's Hour.
Yung nasa na na o yamen Obey me, homie. Send away, buddy.
Children's Hour Radio Show is produced by the Children's Hour Incorporated, a tax-exempt nonprofit dedicated to producing high-quality, non-commercial kids public radio. More information at childrenshour.org. Our theme music was written by C.K. Barlow. Thanks for listening to the Children's Hour, Kids Public Radio.